So good to see you guys. Welcome. And again, this is the third night of a three-part series on the three roots of well-being, the three wholesome roots. And the topic tonight will be non-delusion, non-delusion. So we'll sit for about half an hour and I'll do some light guidance. The invitation is to find yourself a comfortable posture. Posture that balances your body, your skull over your spine. That encourages alertness and relaxation. And to, as you're settling in, if you haven't already, please silence anything that might beep, buzz, ring, or otherwise distract. And notice as we ground into the space, the surroundings, maybe the ambient soundscape around you. Here in the hall, people are filtering in. You may notice the little sounds of people opening and closing doors, finding seats. And maybe in your own space, there's a different soundscape, those of you on Zoom. Just including everything. Allowing whatever's here. It can be helpful to start with a couple of more intentional breaths, deeper, slower breaths. Noticing the expansion of the belly or rib cage. Noticing the relaxation of the out-breath. Taking a moment to attend to your posture. Noticing whatever posture you're in, sitting, standing, lying down. And scanning for any feelings of tension or relaxation. Heaviness or lightness. Warmth or cool. Noticing the weight of this body present in the moment. And the invitation is to attend to whatever anchor of attention feels right. This night, this meditation. And settle, rest the attention on the body breathing. The soundscape flowing through. The overall global awareness of the body of now. Settling into the flow. Time to time. The invitation is to drop in a gentle question. Am I aware? What's most obvious in this moment? Not from a speaking or discursive mental answer, but the answer from the moment. This breath, this sensation, this sound, this thought. Noticing what is. Noticing again now and then. What's happening in this moment? What is the mind's attitude or relationship to this moment? In the last few moments of this meditation, the invitation is to bring an interest, a brightness to whatever present moment experience is happening right now. Noticing, feeling as feeling, sound as sound. Mood is mood, thought is thought. Whatever's there, just noticing what is with interest. Allowing everything to flow through. So welcome everyone that tiptoed in into the room or the Zoom room as we were starting. It's great to see you. And tonight is the third of three nights on the three roots of well-being, the three wholesome roots in Buddhism. So if you weren't here for the other two parts of the series, just know that they are recorded on Dharma Seed and they're accessible through the resources page on the Insight Santa Cruz website. And is there anyone here who's brand new to Insight Santa Cruz tonight? No? Okay. In that case, welcome back, whether I've seen you before or not. And I'm just going to start with a brief recap of the last 2 weeks, because there are a number of people who haven't been here the last 2 weeks, either online or in person. So, the three roots of well-being, the three wholesome roots of Buddhism, are non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion. And this non-whatever is very common in early Buddhism, Buddhist teachings. Rather than defining what, for example, liberation is, or what an absence of greed is, the Buddha would talk about it in terms of negation. And it can be kind of clunky in our English translations, but it has a certain kind of power. What it means is there's this vast territory available of beautiful qualities that are, in this case, not delusion, to talk about tonight's topic. And the non-greed, non-hate, non-delusion is also specific to what are known as the three roots of suffering in Buddhism: greed, hatred, and delusion. Those are considered to be the roots of all mental suffering. So it won't change the fact that we might get sick or we might die, but it changes radically how a person's heart and mind relates to even the most difficult things that arises. And these unwholesome roots, greed, hate, and delusion, often motivate a lot of action in the world. Mental action, speech, physical actions. Happily, so too do their opposites. Non-greed, contentment, simplicity, love, a whole host of qualities can motivate action. Non-hatred, most commonly defined as metta or loving kindness or compassion, but also equanimity or interest. Many, many qualities can motivate action, even the mental actions of the subtlest movements of our hearts and minds. And non-delusion can also motivate us in beautiful ways. Wisdom is a motivator with non-delusion. So these are roots of well-being because in of themselves, as I've talked about on other nights, they generate a sense of goodness, of vibrancy, of aliveness, connection, well-being, simply by being present. And they're supportive conditions for the other good, wholesome, beautiful qualities of mind and heart that we have available to us as practitioners or just as humans. And then finally, the complete absence of greed, hatred, and delusion is synonymous with total liberation. It can be almost kind of hard to imagine a mind, a heart completely free of those things. It's kind of a beautiful thing to try to do, right? So there will be moments in many of our practices where we can taste little instances of absence of one of these, and those can nourish the practice, that can nourish life, a way of well-being, no matter where you are on the path, very beginning, middle, somewhere, slogging along over boulders, whatever it is. So it's possible to really energize, nourish the practice through noticing and cultivating even the tiniest moments of the absence of greed, hatred, and delusion. Tonight, the focus is on non-delusion. And as I've talked about, this negation leaves a lot of room for different experiences. So I want to invite you to just sit and feel into some of the words and phrases of mind states that are non-delusion. And you may come up with others yourself, but you can close your eyes if you want or just tap in. Here's a little word called mindful awareness. Open interest. Loving curiosity. Clarity. Presence. Respect. Allowing. Accepting what is. Non-assumption. Truthfulness. A learning mindset. Non-entanglement. Equanimity. Freedom. Being peaceable. Humility. Awareness of present moment experience. Discernment. Wisdom. Understanding the conditioned nature of what arises. Direct knowledge of things as they have come to be. Freedom. Nibbana. So feeling into that. And as these last few words in the word cloud suggest, non-delusion has a place of very high value in the Buddhist teachings, very high value. And I'll talk about this a little while, and then as we've been doing the past two nights, I'll offer some prompts for group discussion. So first, the beginning of the path of non-delusion is cultivating mindfulness, mindful awareness, lucid awareness. And eventually, this matures into a sense of clarity and a sense of wisdom. So those are probably the two most common synonyms with non-delusion, clarity and wisdom. Though, as a friend of mine and I were discussing today, it is possible to be completely undiluted and still be foggy. If you know you're foggy, you're undiluted about being foggy. If you know you're confused, you're undiluted about being confused. So it's a recognition and alignment with the way things are in this moment. Not what we want them to be, not the stories we've concocted about them, not the stories we wish we could concoct about them, but just what is simple. There's a story, I don't remember which discourse this comes from, but it's the simile of a gatekeeper. And the Buddha's time, ancient India, there were these kind of city-states. It was, you know, proto-civilization, proto-nations. So each city kind of was maybe walled and would have a gatekeeper, and the king or the chief of the city would be somewhere within it. And mindfulness is likened, awareness is likened to being the gatekeeper of the city. And there's a discerning quality to the gatekeeper. The people, messages that are important get routed straight to the king, straight to our executive function, our actionable areas of mind and heart. But the gatekeeper also gets when there's maybe something fishy or a little suspect or not quite right or something that doesn't really belong at that level of importance, and guides those along a different route, maybe more circuitous, or refused to enter altogether. So mindfulness, awareness, can be like that. That which is not useful gets vetted or slowed down from having influence over our decision-making capacity or over the story of what I'm telling myself is about the way things are. This is a form of discerning wisdom already. So it's very common to talk about mindfulness as being this non-judgmental awareness, and that's quite beautiful. However, as it matures, there is a discernment process that's a little bit beyond the secular mindfulness movement, a lot beyond it, which is noticing what's helpful and what's not helpful. And that, it's not like there has to be a blame or a finger wagging or a wrist slap in the mind about that, but the organic intelligence, the organic wisdom of the system then begins to discern, well, that's useful. Think about that more. That's not useful. Maybe we'll let that go. Don't give it energy. So this is a form of true attention. And I mean true attention, not in the sense of true and false, like not as a belief proposition, but true as in what's happening right now. This is true. I am sitting in a chair in a building in downtown Santa Cruz talking to a bunch of folks. That's true. There can be all kinds of value judgments about that or stories about that. But that's a simplicity, right? Of recognizing what's arising. And there may be all different kinds of things arising in each of you. And to notice those with simplicity. So there's a kind of a sacredness to this kind of attention, a simplicity to it, that, and even a fearlessness about meeting what has come to be, things as they have come to be in this moment, not what I wish them to be, not what I imagined them to be 2 hours ago or 10 years ago, just what is. And why is that powerful? Well, acceptance of what has come to be, what is, provides, it's like a location finder. Back before we had nav systems, we had maps. Right? And once you know where you are on a map, you might be way off course, but you're not lost anymore. And then it's possible to change course. So it's the feedback, like feeling our way through a dark room, maybe foot or hand, that critical feedback to knowing what is. That's non-delusion. And this acceptance of what has arisen in the present moment doesn't mean it's an acceptance that things will always be this way. In fact, that's almost impossible. You may have noticed. Instead, it's this accurate representation of, oh, here, right now. And then it's possible to take steps to maintain or build on what's present, or to let go, change course, redirect what's present. But either way, it's not possible until that alignment with what is has happened. Another simile here might be, I don't know if this has ever happened to you. I know it's happened to people I know. If you're misdiagnosed with an illness, you know, if someone's treating you for, a stomach flu, and what's happening is appendicitis, it's not going to work. So coming into alignment with what is also a form of recognizing, diagnosing what's happened, what's happening, if it's beautiful or if it's not beautiful. And that allows for a course of action whether it's a treatment or a maintenance or a flourishing, that helps to bring more goodness and attenuate, soften, let go of what's not so good. You'll notice, maybe you won't notice, but I notice I'm using a lot of passive verbiage, and there's a bit of a reason for that. Non-delusion is often, wisdom is often a kind of a receptive state. We're not leaning into the future, conjecture, speculation. Speculative belief is kind of the opposite of clarity and delusion. So I'll talk about delusion for just a few minutes because it can be helpful to get a sense of it, to get more of a sense of what the wisdom or the clarity is. So delusion can appear as confusion, disconnection, often simply in meditation, it can be as like a filter or a screen, making it hard to discern the way things are. When I first started meditating many years ago now, this was in the early 2000s, I was sitting in the Zen tradition, and the only spot in our apartment to really sit was in front of a window, not a wall, which is what they usually did. And so I would sit in front of this window, and it had a sort of a one of those gauzy curtains. And on nice days, the window would be open, and occasionally the curtain would float away. And it was actually really insightful because I realized after a while, oh, like all of these thoughts, beliefs, narrative stories are kind of like a gauzy curtain or a screen that blocks seeing clearly. Seeing clearly is when the curtain has parted. There's not anything occluding, not my wishes, my fears, my beliefs, my stories, my neuroses, whatever it is. So that's a very common way delusion can appear. And then perhaps most commonly in daily life for many of us, and there's ample opportunity to see this out in the world as well, delusion can appear as an ungrounded, speculative, or false belief or false narrative. And I say false in the sense that it doesn't align with what's actually happening. There's conjecture there, speculation, imagination. Not that it's any crime to have imagination, it's just knowing we're having imagination when we're imagining. As opposed to, oh, that's what's going on with that person. I know it. We've all been there at least once. So delusion is so often based on storytelling gone wrong or gone a little out of control. And our minds are so good at this, building these stories. And so then the act of clarity of non-delusion is to simply know, oh, storytelling. Story making is happening. And sometimes the whole house of cards will fall apart. And it'll just be simple again. So an alternative to this kind of narrative fallacy process is to notice cause and effect in the moment. I'll give an example. I might be chewing on, mulling about an interaction that like was confusing or didn't feel very good or like what was up with that? And my mind can start to spin different possibilities of what that is. So there's a big difference between following those possibilities into a narrative versus noticing that just doing that is causing tension in my neck and shoulders. So that's coming into alignment. Oh, conjecture, tension, belief, that's happening. It's more of an empirical approach rather than imputing me, myself, and mine from an early Buddhist perspective, the ultimate delusion of a separate, fixed, solid self. as the center of every story, as the center of every activity. Because a stunning amount of the time, despite what the inner narrator says, it might not be about me. Actually, it might have nothing to do with me. What a relief. So, most people, this is Tagore, most people, he says, believe the mind to be a mirror, more or less accurately reflecting the world outside of them. Not realizing, on the contrary, that the mind itself is the principal element of creation. The mind itself is the principal element of creation, of our subjective experience. Or to put it in the words of the Buddha, this is from Dichotomy, it's Dhammapada 1. All phenomena are created by mind, led by mind, made by mind. Speak or act with a corrupt mind, and suffering follows like the wagon follows the hoof of the ox. All phenomena are created by mind, led by mind, made by mind. Speak or act with a pure mind, and happiness follows like a never departing shadow. And here, a pure mind is a mind unentangled with what's around it. It doesn't need to project, impute, be under the influence of greed or hatred or delusion. Ajahn Mahabhua, Ajahn means teacher, Mahabhua was his Burmese name, said the practice of mindfulness is to see over your own heart with clarity, with discernment. That's all that's asked. And it's not a small ask. So to recap, non-delusion has many different expressions. Wisdom and clarity are two of the most common. Coming into alignment with what actually is another way to put it. And it is perhaps one of the most powerful expressions of spiritual maturity on the Buddhist path. It's the ability to meet this moment, the next moment, with simplicity, clarity, compassion, wisdom, regardless of what's in that moment. So this is something that comes up in my mind every now and then. Inside every no, every non, there's a yes. And each time my mind, your mind, says no to an ungrounded belief, a narrative fallacy, fantasy, a speculation, each time I say no to imputing my own point of view onto reality as a distortion filter, space is made. And that space is wisdom, simplicity, peace, movement towards freedom. Oh, those of you who've been here the last two nights know that the invitation is now going to be to get into small groups and discuss a couple of prompts. So what I will offer is, those of you on Zoom who don't want to be in the groups, give me a private chat now if there's anyone who would prefer not to participate. And those of you who are here, you can go off to a corner, but you'll be kind of bored. So you might just want to do it and pass if you don't want to talk. And since I'm just going to divide the room in half right down the center and ask you to split like that and connect with each other if that works for you. Okay. And before I put people into groups, there are two prompts. So I'll give you one now and ring the bell halfway through and give you the second one. But the first one is, can you think of moments of clarity or non-delusion in your mind? Could be yesterday, it could be 10 years ago, but just a moment of really coming into alignment with what is. And describe that. Listen to the birthday song back there. I don't know if you guys can hear this on Zoom, but there's a birthday party with loud singing happening very close. And a big cheer. Okay, so moments of clarity or non-delusion. And ask you to go around and briefly share, and then go around again and briefly share again. And we'll spend about 20 minutes in this. So please go ahead and divide yourself up here, and I'll take a minute to do breakout rooms. And I'm going to ring a bell about halfway through and give you a different discussion point. And those of you on Zoom who do not want to be in groups, if you could please turn your camera off, that would make my life easier. Thank you. Okay. If by any chance I put you in a Zoom room you don't want to be in, just refuse the invitation. Enjoy. Welcome back, folks on Zoom. The physical room, the IRL room, is pulling itself back into one group now. And I should have said this at the beginning, but acknowledging that whatever was shared in your group, that you're more than welcome to share about your own experience. Please don't share about a story someone else shared. Allow them to share that. You can share your response if something seemed wise or useful. And to get permission, if you want to talk about something that was shared, get permission from the person first, because sometimes what comes up in these groups can be quite intimate. So confidentiality. With all that said, I would love to hear some of what emerged for you. I could hear little snatches of what was happening in here, and of course, nothing from the Zoom room. So, would anyone like to share something that emerged for them on one of those topics? Yes, Heidi, please.
I'll just share that in a general sense. In our group, we each shared a situation that had been painful and difficult, you know, to different various degrees, and were that we had an idea of what the situation was, and then it took some letting go to have a non-delusion to be more open, but it took some releasing our own idea of what was going on or what the truth was.
Beautiful. So I really appreciate the way you linked the letting go of your own idea to the coming into alignment with the truth of what is. Anybody else? Yeah, please, if you could use the mic and hold it close, that way our Zoom friends can
Sure.
hear.
Actually,
Thank you.
So obstacles to non-delusion. For me, I think that I wrestle with the negativity bias, and I'm, learning more about all of Rick Hansen, how it can be quite prevalent, and we come in this way, the wiring. And sometimes it's louder than others, like maybe in the middle of the night, 3 a.m. waking up, it can be pretty intense. And sometimes more than others, depending on sort of life circumstances. And I think my journey is unpacking it, quieting it, unraveling it. I'm not, and I struggle sometimes with, what kind of relationship do I want to have with it? So usually what I'll do is I'll do the body, stuff, just like really sinking into that. And that helps ground me. And then I'm still there. It'll dissipate and it'll, there's this ebb and flow process.
So you get some relief and it comes back, but at least you get some relief.
Yes. And I think that it really is a lifelong practice dealing with that to some degree or another in different contexts. And I look forward to developing a practice that kind of helps me address it kind of effectively.
And this practice does go there. Absolutely. So thank you. That's very well articulated. And yeah, whether we call it inner critic, inner criticism, negativity bias, so many of us come with that installed. You didn't exactly ask for advice, but I'll name something that a teacher told me I found very helpful, which is to bring in just a touch of humor and distance by assigning, when the mind is being unruly like that, a believability index to what's happening, 0 to 100. And sometimes, if it's just a little playful like that, it can get just a tiny bit more distance. Because at some level, some of the time, we know it's not true. And it's still really uncomfortable and annoying and painful.
Yeah, great. That's interesting.
So thank you.
You're welcome.
I think we have time for one more if anyone is moved to share. Yes, John, please.
Picking up on what Heidi was saying, in our group, we were talking about one of the major obstacles that we found was when we were making something about ourselves. And if we could soften that ego, let go of our involvement in something,
Yes.
that we were able to see things with more clarity.
Absolutely. Very well said. Yes. The fundamental delusion is that egoic involvement, the imputation of self onto things. And the moments when that drops away or softens, it's so much easier to see clearly, isn't it? Yeah. So good insight. Thank you. So thank you everyone for your participation, whether you came just tonight or a number of you have been to all three of these. I love hearing the bits of insight and wisdom and perspective in the room. Thank you for your practice and your attention. And just to recap, that non-delusion is really considered to be the equivalent of wisdom, of clarity. And as I spoke about, and I overheard a couple of you speak about, it's very simple. It's this of awareness, recognition, what is. And then the means and the goal in that way echo each other. There's not a lot to do. And the unfolding of what can be done next becomes much more organic and open and free as that begins to develop. So one way to cultivate it for yourself is to get curious about little moments of awareness, moments of that kind of alignment and recognition, and appreciate them. Because the way our minds work, Rick Hansen talks about this too. I don't remember the original quote, came from someone else. Neurons that fire together are wired together. And the more we appreciate what's good, those moments of awareness, lucidity, the more they come. Isn't that beautiful?
Mm-hmm.
So another way of countering the negativity bias is to actively appreciate. Actively appreciate those moments of clarity, awareness, peacefulness, distance from what's not helpful in the mind. And more generally, this series has been about intentionally turning to those moments of absence of suffering, absence of greed, absence of hatred, absence of delusion. And the more that each of those are recognized, the more they begin to occur. This is a deeply trustable process. So thank you all for coming along for the ride with me. I really appreciate it. And it's been a delight to be with you. I'll offer another series soon. And then later in the spring, Wednesday nights will turn into a regular night of meeting here. So in our last couple of minutes, I actually want to request of the people in person, I'm just going to ask for a show of hands, and on Zoom, a show in the chat. Is 6 p.m. or 6:30 easier for people? Is there a preference? So those with a 6, raise your hand. Okay. And those 6:30, raise your hand. Okay.
I feel like it changes a little bit in the summertime when it gets lighter later.
Yeah, it can, but we're probably not going to change the time and seasonally. But okay, that's just helpful for me to get a little bit of a pulse of what other people's lives are like. And finally, just to name that Insight Santa Cruz, this wonderful 30 plus year old center, is in the final weeks, 2 weeks of its annual fund drive. If you feel motivated to support the freely offered teachings here, your support is warmly welcome. It's actually really inspiring for me and for the all-volunteer board that we're able to do this based on generosity. It's kind of amazing. So we're 75% of the way there. Anything that you can do to help is welcome. And if you're not at the means, you're warmly welcome anyway. The greatest gift you can give yourself and everyone around you is your practice. So, thank you. May all beings everywhere benefit from our practice together. Feel free to unmute and say goodbye if you wish.
Bye. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Don.
Thank you, Don.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Don. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.